Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back, everybody.
It's been a while.
And it's a big one. Welcome to the 200th episode of the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast.
We've done more podcasts than there have been open championships.
Well done, mate. Well done. 200 episodes, and this is it. Thank you, first off, for everybody who listens, watches, comments, subscribes, follows the Facebook page, gets involved with the podcast. It's been a hell of a journey. I've really enjoyed the podcast. It was, you know, we've got the celebrationary live podcast coming up in a few weeks' time, which, by the way, we sold out a ticket so quick. Thank you so much, everybody that bought tickets and are going to come to the live show. More live shows coming in the future as well, so stay tuned for those. But it's to celebrate 4 years and for making 200 episodes.
Commitment.
It's a crazy journey, actually. Because, you know, I'm sure we have talked about this on the podcast in the past. Like, the podcast really came out of a couple of factors. Number one, everybody was doing a podcast.
Correct. We follow, we are sheep.
So we wanted to bring our twist to the party. And I feel like the following that we've gained has surprised you and me.
Yes.
You know, the podcast channel now has had over 240 odd thousand subscribers, the Facebook page with over 100,000 followers, the Instagram does well, the Twitter does well, each weekly listens on whether you listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to it, the following is incredible. And really it was a platform for myself and to chat to Guy, who I chat to pretty much every single day anyway, just to chat about what we do from a business, behind the scenes of the videos, and then to be able to branch it out and have some incredible guests on the channel, like Sir Nick Faldo.
Yes.
Adam Scott.
Yes.
Lee Westwood.
Bryson.
Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland, Brad Faxon, Ricky Fowler, Claude Harmon III, even like Mia Baker, Sophie Walker, Carly Booth. I'll miss people off, unfortunately.
Oh, loads.
Zane Scotland.
Martin Borgmeyer.
Martin Borgmeyer. Richard Hammond.
Richard Hammond.
Who would have thought when we started this podcast 200 episodes ago, we'd have had Richard Hammond from Top Gear fame sat here on our podcast.
John Robbins.
John Robbins, multiple times.
We've forgot a massive one, though.
I'm trying to look on
Matthew
here.
Fryer.
Matthew, of course.
He's on three times.
Tommy Fleetwood. Minwoo Lee. Like, amazing. So, the guests have been amazing. Today's episode is also a guest who we've had on the podcast before, Grant Horvath.
Yes.
So, it's a special episode today. Grant is over here in the UK. We invited him over for a week's worth of filming, which is coming your way very soon. But Grant, very interesting kind of background, obviously was in Good, left over the winter time last year, about December last year, left, and he's now flying solo.
If you are normally somebody that listens to the podcast, we massively appreciate it. We know a lot of people get in the car or they go for a run or go to the gym and put the podcast on. Don't stop doing that. However, for this episode, I would recommend at least watching a portion of it, because just to witness how good Grant's teeth are.
They're amazing.
He's got the best set of teeth in England right now, I think we can say, can't we?
These Americans bring their nice teeth over. But yeah, it's great to have Grant on. We've just recorded the podcast, so we chatted loads about his journey since leaving Good, what he's doing in the future. He also hinted at big collaboration down the line.
He did.
He's hinted at playing with also Rick Shields. With me, but also hinted at playing golf at Medalist with a certain Mr. Tiger.
Yeah.
He seemed to hint at Tiger and his son, so he was interesting. I don't think he was meant to say that.
Well, we've said it again anyway. So.
But yeah, it's a great journey. Whether he had any regrets leaving Good Good, we kind of touched obviously on Good Good because obviously he was a former member, but also gave him lots of time to talk about his future endeavours, his projects, what he loves about YouTube. He's a huge YouTube fan, so that was really interesting as well. So that's coming up very, very soon.
Yes.
And also just want to, and it's been interesting because we've not released a podcast for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And boy, did we know about it.
Mm.
And I'm going to take it as a huge compliment. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of disgruntled, I would say, viewers and listeners,
rightly so,
who certainly allowed their voice be heard in the fact that we'd not released a podcast for 2 weeks.
I will make everyone then a small deal if they're going to subscribe to my new website I've just created that is called rickshieldspodcast.co.uk/payers of money, and they want to subscribe for £20 a month, we'll do a podcast every single week. How's
every
that
day.
Sound every day? No, but just on that though, just following on your point on that, yeah, we did. We release a podcast every Tuesday morning. That is the plan, and that will carry on. And we have a couple of weeks off for holidays and whatnot, but that doesn't mean the podcast is stopping. We will be committed. If there's ever a week where there's not a podcast, there's a reason why that is. Either we're doing it on the Wednesday because of something, or we've been ill, or we're on holiday. It's very rare there's not one. We aim for one a week.
We probably should have, in hindsight, had the foresight of giving you a bit of a heads up in the last episode, but the last episode was a guest episode with Bob the Sport, so
yeah,
we kind of probably weren't thinking far enough ahead, really.
Well, what we are doing straight after we finish this intro now, we're actually recording another one straight away that won't come out next week, I don't think, but it will come out the week after. So on the 26th, no, that's wrong, I'm looking at the wrong month, on the, in fact, it might be the week after that. Where are we now?
What? No, it's in the 20th, it's like 24th.
No, it is the 26th, actually. Oh, no. Yeah, that's right, sorry, the 26th of September, the week of the Ryder Cup, we will be having, which we're recording now, a Ryder Cup special. Not just us chatting nonsense, though. We have got Dave Sampson from European Golf Designs, who is the guy that literally designed Marco Simone Golf Course.
Incredible. We got to play the golf course a couple of weeks ago, and we actually played with Dave himself. So that podcast is going to be coming out a week of the Ryder Cup. We're recording it straight after this. But like I say, first off, thank you everybody for listening, watching. Thanks to all the incredible team that works so hard behind the scenes. Wonderful team of one, Matt.
He works quite hard occasionally.
So Matt, who does an amazing job on the podcast, and obviously yourself, Guy, for planning and bringing guests to the party and just being a very good co-host. Enjoy, everyone. This is the episode with Grant. And
just a quick one before we start that. You did say to me when we started this podcast to invoice you a grand an episode. I've not got around to doing the invoice yet.
Oh,
so it's,
yeah,
200 episodes, 200 grand. I'll send the invoice.
So to Mickey Mouse at Disneyland, Florida.
Is that Minnie's husband?
Yeah, he'll sort it for you.
Okay.
Okay. He's got it for you. All right, guys, thanks for listening and enjoy this 200th special episode with Grant Horvat. Special guest, Grant, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having
on
me.
On our 200th episode, we wanted to bring in some real firepower.
Right.
And you are the man for the job.
Was this planned?
You've flown in all the way from Jupiter, Florida. You landed yesterday, and this morning to kick off the Rick Shields and Grant Horvat week, we've got you straight on the podcast.
Straight on it, right?
You've got no clubs at the moment. You've got no luggage. You don't have much luck when you're traveling over here to the UK.
Yeah, I think at this point people are sick of the, you know, I lost my club videos because I've done like three already. But yeah, they're currently at the airport and hopefully we get them today.
I'm starting to think that actually his clubs are in his hotel room all along. It's a nice little content strand every single trip.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he gets a few new clothes through the business. He goes shopping.
Yeah, all my clothes. I mean, we went shopping last night just to get this. So
It's been a
rough one so far.
How's life, Grant? We had you on the podcast before, July last year. I feel like a lot's changed since that.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, the biggest thing for me was moving back to Florida. I'm back in Jupiter, Florida, and that's one of my favorite places to be because that's home to me, and that's where I do fishing and diving, and I'm always golfing. So that's a huge part. And then obviously going solo has been a huge change. And, you know, it's been amazing, actually. Like, just, I mean, the stuff that we've been able to accomplish so far has been really fun. And we got a lot of great stuff coming up. But, yeah, it's been awesome.
Well, your YouTube channel is killing it. Mm. You're getting close to 500,000 subscribers, aren't you?
We're getting there. Yeah, it's moving.
And that's grown a lot in the last kind of 12 months or so, 6 months specifically.
Right.
But it feels like your content, your strand, it feels like you're really finding your identity in the world of YouTube golf. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think, you know, going solo, what it did was it made me focus all my attention on the channel. So now it's like every day I wake up and, you know, as a YouTuber, it doesn't stop. Like, you're thinking constantly about the next idea, the next concept. And, all my focus has gone towards the channel. And now it's like, it feels good. And like I said, we have some ideas to even potentially start a teaching channel. Cause that's something I have a passion for, is teaching golf. It feels good to just be able to focus on that one thing and do it well.
I was over in January in Jupiter. December. I went to Jupiter. It's possibly one of my favorite places in the whole world.
It's unbelievable. And you got to play medalist.
I got to play medalist with Ricky Fowler.
Unbelievable.
And to be honest, I played a number of really amazing golf courses. I love the par 3 Palm Beach golf course.
Right.
Floridian. Played at Floridian.
That's a great
played
one.
Played at Jupiter Hills with Sir Nick Faldo.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. Two golf courses that are really interesting. Obviously, medalist.
Right.
I feel like I play somewhere else as well, but the amount of golf courses in that area is ridiculous.
You played, just from living there almost my whole life, you played my favorite golf course. Do you want to guess which one it was?
Floridian.
Nope.
Palm Beach, par 3.
Nope.
So medalist.
No. Oh,
Jupiter Hills.
Jupiter Hills.
Is that your favorite out of all them?
That's my favorite. The Hills course. Did you play the Hills course?
When you are stood at the clubhouse, I teed off on the left.
Oh, so you played the other one.
Yeah.
You played the Village. Okay. So there's two courses there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite golf course in Florida, is Jupiter Hills.
What?
The Hills course, the one where you tee off on the...
Better the medalist.
Yeah, I got to play medalist the other day, which is pretty special, but I don't know if I'm...
For someone that's not been to Jupiter...
Why are you saying it like that? I'm not sure if I can what. I felt like there was something there, that guy.
You played with someone?
I got to play... I don't know if I'm allowed to even...
Was it filmed?
It was not filmed, no.
Well, there's a certain very high-profile player that seems to play there, and there's also a very high-profile son that also seems to play there.
Yeah.
And I've got a funny feeling that you might be quite friendly with a certain profile player's son.
Yes, we've been able to play a couple of times together, and I got to hang out with...
And that's who it was with
this
time.
The dad of that son, so that was good. Yeah. I got to hang out with him, but...
And this week you get to play the Marriott Worsley Park with Rick Shields.
Yes! That's a reality, Grant.
Just as good.
That's pretty cool. How did you play?
I played good. I think Medalist was one of the toughest courses I played, because we played it from the Tiger's tee.
Yeah, it's so hard.
The first hole is 270 to carry the marsh.
Tell me about it.
I couldn't carry it. it was into the wind, and I thinned it and came up short. I couldn't even carry it.
It's such a hard first tee shot. The whole golf course is very, very difficult. It's really challenging. It gets I certainly got into my match with Ricky on the back nine and started playing a little bit better. You can't miss.
No.
If you miss the fairway, on a normal golf course, you might be in the trees or maybe on another hole.
Right.
There, you're in trees and you are not finding that golf ball.
I mean, and just Florida golf in general, the palmetto bushes will just, they eat it up. They eat your balls.
Yeah. And then tight lies around the greens.
Yeah.
You know, big undulating greens as well. It's such a challenge. But I suppose if you're playing it all day, every day, that type of golf, your game is going to get a lot better.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And if you're playing medalist from those tees, you have to get better. I mean, just to even break par out there, it feels like a 65 on another course.
100%.
It's that difficult.
So is your game in a good spot right now?
It is, yeah. I've been playing some of the best golf of my life recently because I believe I went to a more forgiving iron. I think I've always drove the ball pretty good. My putting's always streaky, but what I did is I changed to the P770, which is a thicker iron. And instead of playing like the TWs, which I did in the beginning, I just said, like, I'm going to throw ego. I'm going to throw pride. Mm-hmm. I'm throwing everything out. And they're not that thick at all. But I played I have a full set right now of the P770s.
That surprises me.
Yeah. And I never get any jumpers or anything, and they go the correct
distance. So what's that help you with? More miss hits? You're finding more a tighter dispersion still, or?
It's just miss hits in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, because before, you know, you miss hit a TW, and you're going to come up a lot shorter than now. If I miss hit this P770, I could be pin high.
Well, that's exciting to hear, because one thing we're hoping to film this week, we've got many, many videos to film this week we're going to come on to probably in this video. We're looking at a new series. We're going to get you in the hit studio and do like a kind of quite geeky and in-depth what's in the bag.
Yeah. Right.
So that will come to the hit channel soon, and you can go through every club and why using it. So if you want to watch that video, we'll link it down below when it's out. Could be a good one.
That's as long as Grant's clubs definitely arrive today.
They're here. They're here. Right. Good. I have the air tag. They have made it to Manchester. The issue now is getting the clubs from Manchester to the hotel, because I signed the option to have them delivered, and they said you can't go get them. So now I'm waiting for them to bring them. But
I hope we've got time. If not, we can film it another time this week. Because it's funny, because you went up to the storeroom here at the office today to have a look at the different clubs, and I must admit, I would have 100% put you in a Blade. Like when I thought, when you said yesterday your clubs hadn't arrived, I reckon I probably got everything. I said, oh, he uses those bloody Tiger Woods Blades, though. I've got a set of them, but they're in a box. So I don't really want him to use them.
Right.
It's quite nice to hear that you're using the P770s, because I've definitely got a set of them locking around somewhere.
Just on that then, do you think there'll be a time, bit of a nerdy topic here, but will Blades die? Because so many juniors now growing up with that in mind, a bit more forgiving. See, so many elite golfers now moving away from like a Blade putt to more of a mallet. Do we think there's going to be a future where people are just using more forgiving stuff? The ego was just dropped.
Yeah, I definitely think cavity back irons are so much more popular from very, very good players as well. Like, it's really only a handful of players now that I can really think of that use a proper blade. It's rare, true. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, you take Lee Westwood, for example. He's played that thicker ping iron his whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, that I-20, and that's considered thick.
Yeah.
And you look at even a lot of the tightest players are using the T100s, a lot of the TaylorMade players, if it's not obviously the TW, which are the most bladed blades, you've got a handful are in the MBs, but then you've got so much of them now that are in the kind of more forgiving set, 770s, etc. I think it's a good, I think we could see in the next 5-10 years blades just completely dying off.
RIP to blades. Speaking about that though, and forgiveness and your clubs, you two have got a match that's hopefully the first video we're going to film. Yes. Fingers crossed it today,
right?
At your home course, Rick, as home course advantage at Marriott Worsley Park,
right?
How do you both see your chances going? I'll start with Rick first.
So unlike Grant, my game isn't particularly trending in the best possible way at the moment. Okay. However, there has been some light at the end of the tunnel. I've not played golf for 2 weeks. I've had a minor operation and I've been out of action.
This is good for me. This is.
I've been out of action. However, sometimes you've got to beware the injured golfer.
Right.
So I feel somewhat hopeful. I did sneak in 11 holes last night.
Right.
Did you play good?
I had an improv lesson as well. Didn't mean to. Kind of out on the golf course with a competitor that you're going to see later this week. Gave me a little few pointers out on the golf course yesterday, and I liked it. It was, and his point was, I said, oh, I don't know if I can fully trust this week out on the golf course. He said, he looked at me square in the face and went, what, would you rather be playing the way you have been recently? I'm like, oh, wow, ouch. Well, so, yeah, we'll see what happens out of the golf course this week.
Before we go on to Grant's chances, though, we've not mentioned this because we've not done a podcast for a couple of weeks. We apologise. You could have beat Fat Perez.
I think
it was in the palm of your hand.
I got unlucky in a big... Have you played Perez yet?
I was supposed to play Fat Perez and I had food poisoning, but I've played him in a 2v2... Not straight up. We've played him in the YouTube Championship, the first one we had. I played FP, but not straight up yet.
He just knows how to get it round, even when he's not hitting it great, and I've not got that ability.
Oh, he keeps it in play. Yep. FP he's solid.
Yeah,
he's not gonna make many mistakes.
That's the thing, and I feel I started off hot.
I watched the video.
I went,
you were two
birdie
up after the first.
Yeah,
two,
I went birdie
and
birdie.
Almost went three up.
Yeah. I know. I could have easily got three up, and I just. A couple of disadvantages. We'd both not played the golf course before, this particular one in Crail in Scotland. And my slight disadvantage, because I was playing quite well, I had the honour on a few of the tee shots. I got in trouble because we didn't know the golf course.
I saw
and
it.
He kind of learned from mine a little bit.
Right.
And I got a bit unlucky on a few shots. And anyway, I was a bit frustrated myself. But I feel like a couple of weeks ago, three or four weeks ago now, my game was really in tatters. I feel like the last few weeks they were starting to see some glimpses. I've not played for a couple of weeks, so we'll see what happens this week.
Hearing that then, Grant, what are your chances of beating Rick at his home course?
I mean, the thing is, I think Rick can potentially pull off more birdies than me. If it's a match play situation. Mm-hmm.
If it's match play, I fancy my chances more against you than stroke play.
Yeah, that's exactly what I
don't think. I think I could play you 10 times in a row stroke play. I'm not going to beat you. I think I could play you 10 times in a row match play. I might beat you once. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. But you do make a lot of birdies when you get hot.
At match play, I feel more comfortable, definitely. And like you say, home golf course advantage today. It's not particularly a bomber's golf course, so I'm not going to lose out on distance to you. I know the golf course quite well. You jet lagged, hopefully. Hopefully your golf clubs don't fully arrive. And I can hit you. That's why I'm doing it on the first day. I'm getting in there quick and
maybe
early.
Maybe you should give him the TWINs after all.
Yeah. Make it as hard as possible. But yeah, we've got a really exciting week's worth of content. It was really interesting. We've always been open to collaborations, and we've always been open to collaborations with channels that we love. Obviously, right. good collaboration we did last year with yourself and the boys. That was a huge success. Mm-hmm. Bob Does Sports, we invited over recently over to Scotland, had a great week with those guys. And we were talking just off camera a minute ago how hilarious they are.
Right.
Like, they are so funny. And hopefully you guys listening really enjoyed last week's podcast. And if you've not checked it out, I was a guest on their podcast as well, which was really funny. That's worth checking out. We dived into quite a lot of detail on that. And we've got a challenge coming up on their channel. We did a Guinness challenge.
I'm surprised you did that, Rick. I want to watch it. I'm going to have to watch that one.
Guy said
he's gonna have to watch that one over.
Yeah, yeah. We need to check that video before it goes out.
One thing, your golf might not always live up to expectations, Rick, but I'll be honest with you, your drinking does.
I can drink.
You can hang with them.
I'm a plus handicap in drinking.
You're impressed with your drinking, I'll be honest.
Well, yeah, I can drink. There shouldn't be any surprises there, really. But yeah, we've got an exciting week. And then, so obviously this, a few months ago, we were like, you know, we've got to do more collaborations this year. And I was like, Grant, what's Grant up to? I was like, well, let's invite him over. Like, see if he can come over. And we managed to make it work. And it's like, brilliant. And like you say, we've got loads of different golf courses planned out this week and loads of different concepts of videos, content for my channel and for your channel. So I think it's going to be a class week.
Yeah, and I think you and I are very similar with, like, we're both nerds of the game. I think we're both very invested into golf and just the game in general. So that's really cool to share that in common. But yeah, I'm so excited for this week. I know we have some cool courses coming up as well. Mm-hmm. And I've never even really played golf here much. Other than, I mean, we were at JCB.
I know, pretty much every day last year when we came.
Yeah, I've never really played links golf. So I brought a 2-iron. Just for this week to hit stingers. So we'll see.
I feel like that's such an American thing to do.
Yeah.
It's probably the right strategy. But when I was up in Scotland last week with the boys a couple of weeks ago, I was chatting to one of the caddies and I said, you know, is it mainly US guys that come over? He said, honestly, 75%, if not more, of our footfall, certainly at some of the big, really popular courses like King's Barnes and Old Course, they're Americans. And I said, oh, brilliant. He said, how do they adapt to links golf? And they said, well, often they really struggle. And I can almost every single time they've put a long iron in the bag. And almost every single time at the end of the week, they end up giving it to one of the caddies. Like, because they'll buy a 1-iron.
Right.
Just for that trip.
Yeah.
They'll use it for the week. And then when they go back to Florida or California or whatever, they don't need that club. So they end up giving it to the caddy just so they, like, get rid of it, really.
Right.
And so you've done a very stereotypical American thing, but that's fine.
That's tough. That's a tough look.
But the good thing is, you can probably hit a 2-iron.
Yes.
Unlike someone maybe an 18 handicapper that tries to bring one over. I think you'll actually utilize the 2-iron quite a bit.
Yeah. So what's your biggest tip for links golf? What would you say is the biggest difference between Jupiter, Florida golf, what I'm used to, and then now going over to links golf?
Expect to hit good shots and not be rewarded.
It's just because of the rollout.
Just because of certain bounces. And you've got to accept that. And it is tough. And it took me a long time in links golf to realize that. Like, you can hit what you've pictured as a great shot. And it could be a drive. It could be an iron shot, a wedge or whatever. And a lot of the result depends on the bounce, the roll, the undulations, and you can't take it to heart too much. Like, you are, sometimes it'll work in your favor. sometimes you'll hit a bad shot and it'll actually run and go up a valley and round a swale and get close to the green.
Right.
But other times you might flush it and you think that's perfect. Mm. And it might just hit a little bump in the green or a short of the green and it'll kick off to the right or left. And you're like, what the hell? And all the bunkers, unlike American golf, the bunkers are much more naturally placed.
Right.
So they're almost more like collection points. So if a ball is going anywhere near a bunker, the chances are it's going to go in the bunker. Where in America, I feel like your ball going towards the bunker doesn't
come
mean
up short.
It can avoid it. Do you get what I mean?
If that makes sense. Yeah. No, 100%.
I feel like the bunker, even though the size of the bunker doesn't have to be that big, because of the surrounding area, it's three times as big. Because everything is going to fall into the bunker.
Right. Yeah. And immediately when you talk about links golf, and just being able to roll it, I do think of like FP's game. I think because I've played with FP a good bit now, and like he hits it low.
Yeah.
And I feel like he could roll up shots just from like super far away. Yeah. That's what he kind of relies on, FP. He carries his driver and it rolls out from where it lands. It rolls out another.
Yeah. And it's certainly, and that's the other thing. If you're hitting fairway on links, you'll get the advantage of roll.
You know where I still think as well, though, I struggle with links golf, and I'm looking out to play a lot of good courses. It's the wind, but not necessarily into the face, because we kind of expect that. Like you said, you bring a 2-iron, you play for the roll. It's the wind behind. We played an amazing golf course called North Berwick, and it played the opposite way to what it would normally would with the prevailing wind. And some of the, I think I had one of the holes, like 180, hit like a wedge through the green. Like, it's insane. It's trying to judge that. Yeah. I almost don't know without a caddy, how do you program yourself to hit those clubs?
That's interesting to me. Now, going into a match with Rick, I think you would have the advantage immediately with links style golf.
I think so, yeah. I like links golf a lot. Obviously, I've played a lot of it living over here. My advantages are, I feel like I can put a lot more from around the green, which again is not something you can do in Florida. That was a thing, like say, Medalist. All the greens are raised. If you miss the green, you have to chip.
Right.
Like, you can't do anything else. Like, you can't really put it up as much as I tried. But on links golf, the difference between just off the green and green isn't that much difference, really.
Right.
By you can obviously can't mark it. And then the other probably advantages I've got is that, you know, maybe I can flight it a little bit lower. And when I hit shots into greens, I'm very much conscious of where the ball's going to land rather than just the spin. Where I feel like shots in America, it's just about pitching it on the green and making it spin.
Right.
Where luckily at the moment, you've hit the UK where it's, we've actually had quite a bit of rain, so not everywhere's burnt out. It's not as hard as this table. When there has been times where it's been hard as the table, like trying to land it, you've got to land it 50 yards short.
So, exactly. So you're... So the number you shoot, if you shoot 165, are you trying to land it 130 yards?
Right now, you can land it closer to 165 because of the ground conditions as of right now, because it's quite green everywhere at the moment.
Gotcha.
When you get a burnt out summer, yeah, you could land it 110 yards with the right flight. Mm. Or you could, you know, you can
just roll it up.
Yeah. You could literally chip a shot with a 7-iron or even a little 9-iron or whatever. You could hit any club. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that could help out, you know, the average golfer maybe. It could.
Yeah.
Give them a chance to roll up to the green at least.
Potentially. But then they put a bloody bunker in the way and they put rough in the way. So it's not always like a perfect strip. Right. I mean, the match we're playing today at the Marriott is much more of an American style golf course. I know we'd played it in the meetup last year and we played a handful of holes. That's not linksy at all. Like, it's not American golf. Granted, it's not like Floridian golf.
What you see is what you get.
Yeah, you can land at the pin. You can spin it back. You know, the carry that you get is off the tee. It's not going to roll that far. But yeah, it's links golf. We've got a couple of really nice courses lined up this week. We've got a mixture of normal parkland English version of American golf courses, which we get a lot out over here now, and then actually some really nice linksy golf course where it makes you think, and there's not as many trees and the rough is quite high, and it's just great. I love the variety of golf we have over here.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the courses we've got lined up, we won't give it away just yet, but it is a former Ryder Cup venue,
right?
And obviously the Ryder Cup is right around the corner now. What are you thinking your chances are?
What do you enchant
for USA?
For USA at the Ryder Cup.
I want to say USA, but Europe looks stacked. Europe looks really good.
I think it looks good.
Yeah.
Europe.
Mm-hmm. I do.
I mean, I hope so.
I'm team Europe. I would always root for the USA, but I think Europe's going to pull this one out.
I really do.
That shocks me.
There's certain people on the team I'm super excited about in the Europe standpoint. Ludwig, I think, is everything I listen to and watch with people who are seriously in the know are like, he is going to be a generational talent. He's going to be the
next better
Tiger.
Driver.
What's his name?
Ludwig Åberg.
He's a better driver Rory.
Yeah. I think really? He actually pronounced it Ludwig Åberg or something.
He turned professional in May this year. And he's already gotten to the Ryder Cup
June,
team.
You know.
June. Yeah. Gotten to the Ryder Cup team.
Never played a major, yeah.
His stats are unbelievable.
Right.
He is the best driver in the world.
He is supposed to be the real deal.
That is I've seen his swing a couple times, but to be a better driver than Rory is, I mean, that.
Because I always feel like the stereotypical viewpoint of European versus USA is, oh, the USA hit it so much further, European need to be tighter, you know, we hit it straighter. That's gone.
We've got some bombers now. Well,
of course we have. That's what I'm saying. Like, back in the day when, like, Luke Donald, who was obviously the captain this year, was in the team, yes, that was quite stereotypical. He wasn't the longest, but he was arrow straight. Someone like Lee Westwood, not the longest arrow straight. Poulter, not the longest arrow straight. But now we've got John Rahm.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got Rory McIlroy.
Right.
Now
even
we've got
Fitzy can bomb it.
Åberg. Like, we're not now the straight and accurate.
Right.
Where I feel like actually a few more your guys are that this year. Like Brian Harman is the straight and accurate, not the longest.
Right.
You know, I think there's two big shocks from the team. I'm really surprised Justin Thomas got on the team.
I am. I'm surprised on that one.
In a big way.
Justin Thomas is my favorite golfer, and I'm always going to root for him, but I'm still surprised.
I think as a team player and Spieth's mate and as someone in the locker room, you need him at the Ryder Cup.
Right.
I think he would have been a great vice captain this year. Don't think he needed to be on the team personally. And then from Europe's standpoint, I think Hogarth was a real random one for me.
Who would you have replaced if you were the captain? Who would you have replaced Justin Thomas with?
It's a good question. I probably need to proper look into the details a little bit more because I don't want to choose someone that
Keegan Bradley.
That's exactly.
Yeah,
that's
Keegan
the first
Bradley
one.
Was probably the one that felt like
first one
deserved a little bit
mind.
More. And to be honest, I would have probably put Bryson DeChambeau ahead of Justin Thomas as well.
Bryson's a great guy, and I'm up there. I mean, he just shot a 58.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
And I feel like he's found something. You never want to count Bryson out.
Yeah, that's true. But I think what I sometimes probably underestimate, or maybe the captains overestimate, I don't know, is how much does this team camaraderie actually make a difference? Because I always think of golf as being such an individual sport where you're going out and you have to beat the people in front of you. But they put so much emphasis now on who's going to gel well together, both in foursomes, in four-wall, but also from chemistry. And obviously, you know, Bryson's a great guy. We get on well with Bryson. There's some things you hear that he's not as quite well-liked in that team as maybe JT is.
Right.
So has he been picked more for that? I mean, he's got a great record, Justin Thomas, obviously in the Ryder Cup as well. I don't know. I feel like Europe have a better team camaraderie.
I mean, there's no one hotter in the world than Victor Hovland. There's nobody.
Victor Hovland is really strong.
You look, the one that I question a little bit is Robert McIntyre. Is he going to be a dog and get it done, or is he going to fold under pressure?
I think he's played his way into the team with his performances this year. I think he could be really strong. I've probably got a few question marks over like Shane Lowry and maybe Justin Rose a little bit. Rose, you need a bit of experience in there. But Shane Lowry's not playing. I think this is only his second Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a real like stalemate in the whole team.
True, but when you've walked and you've down the 18th and you've won the Claret Jug,
yeah,
not much can phase you after that.
Right.
I feel like so.
But then,
been on the biggest stage.
You could put Molinari back in the team.
Well, yeah.
For that instance, like, I think it's a real. I think with the teams coming out has made me more excited about this Ryder Cup.
Yeah, me too.
Because I honestly felt like this year's Ryder Cup could have really fell flat on its face. Because
right.
I just feel like there wasn't much of a hype around it, certainly with the LIV players not being involved, certainly from a European standpoint.
Right.
And obviously, LIV players in America, it's only Brooks Koepka actually got into the team, but obviously because he's won a major this year. But I feel after seeing the 12 guys from both teams, it's like, actually, this could be really, really good Ryder Cup. We got a chance to play the golf course a few weeks ago. It's a very interesting golf course. In fact, in next week's episode, we've got the course designer of the golf course. Tune in, so make sure everyone's listening to that. But I'm fascinated. I personally, as much as I obviously root massively for Team Europe, I don't think Team Europe's team is as good as Team USA's team. That's my. I just don't think it is.
I think in general, though, I think experience in Ryder Cups, like you talked about Justin Rose, I think that is such a valuable thing because if you talk to these pros, and you ask them the most nervous they've ever been, it's almost always the Ryder Cup. Yeah. So if you have that experience over someone like a McIntyre,
it's just mad.
What do you think? You're right, I've heard that many a time, it's the nerves. What is it about it? Is it the fact there's obviously more fans, it's more leery, or do you think it's the fact they're playing part of a team and don't want to let their team down?
You're playing for your country, your continent, you're playing for Team USA, you're playing for Team Europe, like, it means a lot more. And like I say, it's so you're not letting your playing partners down. But also, I was in France 4 years, 5 years ago now, France was, wasn't it, 2018. I was there on the first tee on Friday, the very, very first tee shots. I was stood in the grandstand. I was as nervous as I've ever been.
That's crazy.
I'm literally looking at these, and it's absolutely packed. Like, I can't remember how many people have sat behind the first grandstand, but we saw it at Rome. There's no grandstand.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In golf, that's as big as that behind the first tee.
Well, these courses are designed for the Ryder Cup.
Right.
So they're literally, they're built, it's insane.
And then you throw in the atmosphere, you throw in the sound, you throw in the kind of, is it the Icelandic clap that the Europeans end up doing?
Right.
The atmosphere is ridiculous. And I don't even know how they tee the golf ball up.
Right.
Like, I literally look at them going, oh my God. I mean, Le Golf National in France, that was a very, very difficult first tee shot. There's water down the left, dogleg right, really hard. In Rome, it's not as hard of a tee shot.
No.
Like the actual first tee shot, it's a little bit uphill, slightly left, right to left hole. You can't really hit it in stupid trouble. You can find the rough, granted. But I think it's a much less daunting first tee shot in Rome.
Do you think if you're Americans can get behind the Ryder Cup more because it's their actual country? This is a bit of a different topic, but I don't feel necessarily European. Like, obviously, Great Britain and Ireland is part of Europe.
Well, it started as Great Britain and
Ireland. Well, exactly. And now it's obviously...
And then because we get losing, like we have to stretch it out to Team Europe.
Every player in the American team, obviously, is American. You're American, so you're kind of rooting for your country.
Right.
Or if it was a football match or soccer, you know, we cheer for England.
But I would say my view on it is more against, I'm rooting against America.
Right, fair dues.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's more I just don't want the American team to win.
I don't think the course comes into play.
No, as in like, we don't feel maybe as connected as Team Europe.
Right.
Like, it's not, like Guy's saying, if this was Team Great Britain, which we are both from the UK, it would feel like, well, it's our country. Where at the moment, we're representing kind of Team Europe. It doesn't feel quite, for us, I just want to make sure that we beat USA.
For example, people might hate on this, but if Tiger was still playing, which obviously he's not in this Ryder Cup, against Jon Rahm, I think I'd want Tiger to beat him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because what? I don't, Spanish, so what? No, they're both sure foreign countries. That. But would you really? You'd want John Rahm to beat Tiger?
Yeah, I loved it when he beat him in France.
Wow.
I'd always want Tiger to win.
Wow.
I love that. I loved it when he beat him.
But then if it was the Masters and they're both going down the 18th, you'd want to win.
Tiger.
Yeah.
There you go.
There goes my...
Because it grows, I mean, obviously.
And also I want the collaboration that you're going to set up for us, Grant, right, eventually.
Anyway, a lot has... Since you last came on the podcast, obviously, Grant, which now was over a year ago, time has flown. A lot has changed, obviously, for us, but probably even more so, a lot has changed for you. Obviously, you were famously kind of part of Good, that collaborative, and now you're kind of running solo and doing a great job of that. So a lot's changed, I guess. How did that change come about, and how's life been since then?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's been great. I think... When you're able to just focus on one thing, like I said earlier, it just becomes better. And I love meeting new people. I think that's one of the best things with, you know, being able to travel so much and collab. I'm just meeting so many new people and being able to spend time with them, with each person I meet, and just form relationships. I think that's the funnest thing.
When you decided to leave Good, mm-hmm. How long was that process? Like how much had you been thinking about it? How much did you kind of focus on that? Was it months and months in the build up? Did it feel like an overnight decision?
It felt very, very quick. Yeah. It was definitely like a very it happened all at once. Which obviously wasn't the ideal scenario, but yeah, it happened very, very quick.
When you first left, I think it's fair to say you got a lot of hate.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Like a lot of hate. I remember you putting a video out there kind of saying, listen, this is my decision. And, you know, and the comments, some of the hardcore good fans weren't happy with your decision.
Right.
That's fair to say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when the video got released on Good, I went on my Instagram and my last post had like thousands of comments that were just like, people coming after me, which was just crazy. But and I can understand as a good fan, you know, I mean, people really, we had some, I mean, just the good fans in general were so diehard. They still are. And I think I can understand being in their shoes.
Did you envision the kind of breakup, the you leaving it to go the way it did? That did you envision the amount of kind of hate that might be thrown towards you, or did that all come as a bit of a surprise?
It for sure did. I didn't think it was going to be that intense as it was right off the beginning. I remember right after it did happen, I went on my phone, I went on TikTok, and the first like five clips were like montages of myself from just like with music playing, and like I was just like, what is happening? And it was just like the craziest thing.
So people were making these montages because you'd left Good.
Yeah,
Good.
Yeah.
But it's almost like a RIP Grant type of thing.
Yeah, it was like sad music over it, you know? So yeah, it was.
Was there a part of you though? Obviously, I can imagine opening your phone, so a lot of messages like that might be quite disheartening. Certainly, negative ones or over the top ones. And I'd like to clarify, that's no reflection on Good. I think any internet group or that have a fan base are going to be some younger fans who, and internet culture itself, people can behave in a way that's not really how they would behave in real life. But
right.
Did you see a positive in that though? That obviously people must be gutted, because people wouldn't be leaving comments if they didn't care. If you were just a regular, always a guy that's sometimes on the videos, no one's bothered. But they're obviously really upset you left. So do you use that as positive energy to think, actually, if people care about me so much, I can make a go of this on my own?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that was the most amazing thing. Like, I understood the hate, but I also, it showed, when you're in it, you don't really notice mm-hmm. how much people care. Like, you don't. But when you step away, that's when you really feel it. And it was like something, it was crazy. It really was. It was absolutely unbelievable. But I believe in myself. And that's one thing that, and in the YouTube space and just golf in general, I do believe in myself. And that's one thing that I always kind of held my head on. So I do think, you know, I have a really deep passion just for content creation now and YouTube in general. Like I've really loved the art of it. Mm. And that's what, you know, I just felt like I was called in that direction.
Was there ever a point soon after you announcing you're leaving and you're getting all this hatred and stuff, was there ever a point in time you thought, I've made the wrong decision?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, it was a
which
tough
time. Which is natural.
I think natural for anyone. Yeah. I think it was a very, very, you know, tough time. And like now, obviously, time has passed.
Yeah, of course. It's easy to look on reflection now and go, you know, you've obviously made that decision.
Right.
But about at the time, it was very difficult.
It was very difficult. And, you know, time has passed now. And the greatest thing now is like, you know, I still talk with a lot of like my friends in Good. And it's like, it's all kind of past, which is nice. And I think just getting past it and, you know, it just, in a normal job, someone leaves and it's not, you know, like a normal like business or anything, someone leaves and it's just like, you know, they're replaced. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely, you felt it times a million.
Did you obviously got hate online, mm-hmm. which is not nice at all. Right. And like I say, not expected, but kind of went on reflection, you think, yeah, maybe it was expected to happen to some degree. Did you ever get any hate in person? Did anyone ever actually in person say,
I'm
going to
guess no before you say it.
I think there was one time I was walking, you know, when you go to a golf tournament, it's pretty, you meet a lot of cool people. You meet a lot of the fans at golf tournaments. I was walking at a golf tournament and I remember this one, like I've had a couple of kids, like it's always the real young kids and they come running up and they're like, get in like a group and they're like, why'd you leave Good? And they're like, all like, you know, stand around with their arms crossed. So that's happened like a couple, but no, nothing like mean.
But does that not just show you that internet culture as well, though? You've had countless messages, as we have, for many different things that are negative, but then in real life you've got maybe one case study of where it's happened. It just shows that people say things they don't really mean online.
Yeah, and that brings me to a point, like when I did leave, it was like I experienced more growth in the initial, when the video like came out, I was kind of like viewing my analytics. I was like, let's see what happens, because I know it's going to be a crazy time. Initially the channel took like a little hit, and then from there it's just like it went down and then it just went up.
Yeah.
And it like, it was my biggest growth ever, and it was like, so there were more support, like there was way more support than I think people think. There's a lot of hate, obviously, and I think the hate comes from a lot of the younger crowd, and I think the older people understand that, you know, in life things happen, things change. And you know,
What's interesting though is those people that would have unsubscribed are probably actually your biggest fans, because the ones that take the energy to actually unsubscribe and that frustrated by it, they'll be watching every video.
No, I mean, it takes
effort. They'll probably come back and like, subscribe anyway.
A guy who's 25, 30, who's married and got a good job, who's mature, isn't going to go to the effort of unsubscribing from your channel because you don't work with Good anymore.
Right.
He's not going to bother. Someone who's 14, who's gutted, might do, but then the next day when you release another video, they'll be watching. So it's just something to remember, isn't it? That not everything you see online is actually that important.
I think as well as humans, and I've experienced it in 11 years making YouTube content, we do remember bad comments.
Oh, that's the number one comment you remember.
So regardless of, you know, the comments on that video you might look back on now, there might have been a tidal wave of positive comments as well.
Right.
You just don't remember.
You only remember.
That is
a great statement. That is a great statement, because if you post a YouTube video, you could get 50 positive ones. If you get one negative, that one sticks out and you think on that one for a second. It always gets to you, the negative one, the criticism. But the ones that are positive, you kind of just use as fuel. But it's definitely interesting that to think about.
What was your best memory being in Good?
My best memory was with you, the three chippins. Oh.
The three what?
The three chip-ins with
you. Oh, God, that major.
Yeah.
You played ridiculous that
the
day.
The three chip-ins with Rick in the major was the craziest time of my entire life, yeah. I'll never do that again, and I firmly believe it. And it's, like, crazy, because that's to this day, the most viewed Good video.
I think it was mainly because of the chip-ins rather than
it was,
me.
I don't know where the views came from, but it was crazy. Like I
was so mad that.
I couldn't believe, like, the second one happened.
I'm trying to think. Was the first one on the eighth where you actually chipped it up, but it ran back down the hill?
Yes.
And then you hold it. Was that the first one of the chip-ins?
Is number eight right before the par three?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the first one. That was for par.
And I remember you chipped in on 15.
The par five.
Where was the par five? Oh, no, you chipped in on 13 and you chipped in on 15.
13 and 15. But the craziest thing was the second chip-in. You know, it, like, we're all going crazy because it's like two chip-ins in one round. When we got to the third chip-in, that's when people started saying, like, I kept hearing, I heard Matt say it, I heard Micah talk about it. They're like, there's no way you chip this in again. And then that one, that's when the moment, like right before I'm like giggling. I'm like, there's no way this could ever happen. And it goes in, and that's when I like lost my mind, because I'm like, this is crazy. Like, that was like a difficult pitch. Like, that was not easy. I was kind of like over to the side. It like nipped, went in perfect speed.
And that play, that major went to a playoff with you and Micah.
Yep.
And you won it, didn't you?
I did.
So you've won the major with the most amount of videos on the Good channel with three chippings.
Nice.
I did. And that, you know what's crazy is at that day.
Ah, sorry, just a quick one. You didn't leave, did you?
No.
They kicked you out. That's what it was.
You explored it.
Because you've got three chippings on the most viewed video and you won it. They actually forced you out. They kicked you out.
Rick figured it out.
Do you know the thing though? That just summarizes golf. And one of the reasons that I love golf is that when you've been asked them what one of your best memories is, it doesn't come down necessarily to your best ever score. It's those things that happen on the golf course.
Magical
and I think that's
moments.
What keeps everybody going out. Because you could go out and shoot, you know, you could be an 18 handicap and go and shoot 100 and have a horrendous day. But something happened that maybe you chipped in, or you hold a bunker shot, or you hit a great iron to 2 foot and banged it in for a birdie too. It's those moments that we kind of don't forget that anybody can get. You could never play golf before, play your first round and make one par, and it's that feeling.
Oh,
it's incredible.
And what I was going to say is at the end of that round and going into the playoff with Micah, it felt like I was trying to win the Masters. Like, I probably felt the same feelings as if I was trying to win the Masters. I don't think I would feel anything different. Like, it was a big deal. It was 7 hours of grinding.
Oh, it was hard day.
It was a long day. Like, I knew in my brain how many views this was going to get. And I remember talking to Colin. Like, he had the SD cards in the van. And we're like, me and Colin were joking. We're like, you need to you need to put them in like a chest. Like, never let those get anywhere. But yeah, it was like, I remember just so nervous on that playoff hole. And it's crazy to feel that, because it was just that intense. It was quiet. And me and Mike were trying to beat each other.
I had to shoot, unfortunately. I had to get home. So I missed the playoff. But yeah, it was, I remember being intense. I thought you'd say like Matt's holding one on like the par four.
Okay. Yeah, it's selfishly. That's my best moment.
Yeah.
The best moment for sure, like being a part of. Yeah, Matt's hole in one was unbelievable. And Garrett's albatross.
Mm.
Garrett's albatross, because Garrett and we did GM golf full time. So that was crazy. Like, Matt's hole in one, obviously having all the camera angles up at the green, it was just like a miracle. And then what happened prior to that, I don't think that'll ever be topped. But Garrett's albatross on the par five was so crazy, because that's just, you know, it was just me, Garrett, and Ryder. And I was filming it down the line. And like right before Garrett hit, I think he said like, you know, Ryder, go up to the green, let's film this. And Ryder just happened to drive up to the green to get an angle. And Garrett was kind of struggling that day. And I remember, because I hit the tee shot. So it wasn't like a true albatross.
Yeah, team one.
No, not to knock anything, but like, yeah, I hit it was like we were doing a scramble. We took my drive and Garrett was like, I'm going to hit this huge fade. And he hit like a 20-yard cut and it landed short and rolled in like perfect.
He didn't believe Ryder did it at first either.
No. He's like, what is?
Such an insane shot.
What's your relationship like with the boys at the moment?
I mean, I talked to Garrett. I talked to Garrett a good bit. I talked to Matt a
lot.
You
were at Matt's wedding recently, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Matt, all the boys were there, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Yep. I saw everyone. That was the first time I saw them, you know, since everything. It's been a while. I've seen Matt. I've seen Garrett. I've seen a couple of the guys. But yeah, I haven't seen them since. So it was nice seeing them.
Was it all right?
Yeah. It was good seeing them. And, you know.
Was there any emotional crying over a few beers at the end of the night? I feel like you guys are all too squeaky clean to be boozing and crying at the end of the night.
Yeah, no, definitely not that. I mean, I was just happy to celebrate Matt. You know, I was just kind of there, and it was awesome to see him and Maddie, you know, get married. So, but yeah, Colin's such a, you know, I hung out with Colin and Max for a long time, and like we talked about YouTube in general. So that's always fun. Like, I always like to like nerd it out with them and talk about YouTube.
I think what's really interesting for me though, and when you and obviously Micah announced you were leaving, you know, it's not the first time, it won't be the last time that either he's like a boy band and somebody leaves, or certainly in the YouTube space now, it's quite common that there's like a big platform and one person leaves to do their own thing. And it can go one of two ways, really. It can obviously be a great success for that person, which I would definitely class yours as. Or it can be a case where they might start up, get a few followers, and before you know it, they kind of die a death. And even if you look at a huge platform like, you know, Mr. Beast set up Mr. Bro for his brother and gave him all the almost free
started,
subscribers.
Started with a million subscribers,
yeah,
didn't it?
Loads of money, loads of insight editors, and that just flopped because he had no charisma and didn't really obviously go anywhere. So how did you make it a success? How did you really, was there something that you thought, right, that is the key, or is it just a bit of everything?
Yeah, I think when you bet on, like when you do bet on yourself, there's that, I felt like my back was against the wall. Like, what are you going to do? What's your next step? I mean, that's when it got, you know, it does get scary because you're like, when you're in good, you have that to fall back on. Mm-hmm. But when you're out on your own, it's kind of, you know, your back's against the wall. And yeah, it's just like that feeling, that pressure. And then obviously bringing in my videographer Skyler helped a ton. I mean, he grinds on the channel. We tried to take the production to the next level. So a lot of different things there, like really just all kind of fueled. And yeah, I mean, now it's like we kind of figured our lane out. We kind of figured out our path. But yeah, it's definitely the back against the wall thing.
If you were to describe your YouTube channel then to someone who'd never seen it before, how would you actually describe it?
I would say serious golf, but yet lighthearted. Like it's, I want it to be a place where there's high quality golf.
I had a line and I forgot. It's almost like high level golf, but with entertainment,
right?
Entertainment, high level golf.
Exactly.
Really.
That's, you nailed it. So I enjoy playing with just pros. Like I want to collab with, you know, different pros in the future and do 18 hole matches. And I want to see if I can beat a lot of these guys. Like going out to film with Bryson right after this, we're heading out to Dallas. We're going to do like an 18 hole match. I want to see, you know, just for fun, you know, if I can compete. I just did a match with George the other day. Mm-hmm. And George is one of the, I mean, he's unbelievable at golf. He really is. So, and like playing with him and just that level of golf, it feels like I'm getting better and we're having tons of fun. So
at what point though? Cause obviously you are a very good, are you pro now? Or are you still?
No.
What would your handicap kind of be now? Just to the listeners, roughly +3, something like that, maybe, or what, better? Or
yeah, I would say, I mean, yeah, +1, +2.
So how do you, that's a good level of golf, clearly. Mm. How do you now maintain that kind of love for practice, that time for practice, as well as running a successful channel where ultimately what really pays the bills is views?
Right. That's practice has taken like kind of a, I don't practice.
Yeah.
I really don't have time. I'll go hit balls at the range. It's not like I was in college, because in college it was like you actually intentional practice. Mm-hmm. Now it's you practice when you play for the con. I mean, when you're doing videos, because the time I'm not doing videos is the time I'm also trying to be present, mm-hmm. you know? I just feel like, you know, we film so many videos that if I'm done filming, then I'm practicing on top of that. At that point, it's like,
yeah,
it's almost too much golf.
I hear you.
I think it's sometimes, you see a lot of creators do this, and Rick did it with his Quest for the Open many years ago. When a creator tries to have like an actual channel and also a mission within that channel to get on a tour, it's so hard to actually do them both successfully. I think the Brian Bros may be one example of that, where obviously George went on to play on the PGA Tour and win. But to actually balance the two, it's so hard to do them both.
Yeah, I mean, Bryson, I remember talking with Bryson before he, you know, when he was just starting his YouTube channel, and he was like, he wanted to be like the first guy to try and do both.
Mm.
And it's just that it's hard. Like you can't focus heavily on your career on the PGA Tour and be doing content creation unless you have a team that's kind of doing it for you and you're just doing it.
Yeah.
But then that comes across as it's not really you.
Exactly.
That's the difference. Like
exactly.
If it's your channel, you've got to be involved with it. You've got to have a say on the edit. You've got to have a say on how it's going to be produced or what matches and where you're going to play in this.
I think the first person that really breaks onto the scene that has done that is going to have such a fan base. It's a little bit like what Minwoo's doing now with like his social media. It's so authentic and it's so kind of behind the scenes, and it's also it makes them so likable that the fan base that you can create, and then obviously the sponsorship off the back of that, it's going to be insane.
I'll tell you who probably was the first, like Poulter.
Yeah.
To really kind of use social media to show off their personality, but also still playing tour level golf. Like, I feel like there's not been that many, because a lot of people who play on tour, their social media is managed by someone else.
Right.
Exactly. Like,
and you can feel that.
Of course you can.
The other one I'm thinking of is Carl Phillips.
Yeah.
Because he's at some...
He's done that. And his dad...
He's
been doing content since...
So long.
15 years ago when he was like 7, 6. So people have literally watched him for that long. Because I think Min Woo was on his channel years ago as well.
He's only 20.
At Stanford.
Wow.
If he goes on to make it on the PJ Tour, he'll have such a fan base.
And I think he will. Yeah. I think he's unbelievable.
Have you got any ambitions to play on tours or to play professional golf? I know obviously Micah seems like he's going much more that way.
Right.
I've not spoke to Micah about that. Obviously, I know you mentioned that you obviously still hang around with him a lot. Is that something that you've got ambitions for? And is it something that Micah's really trying to focus on?
Yeah, I think that's definitely Micah's passion is pro golf. So he's going in that direction. My passion's YouTube. I love thumbnails. I love all that. Like I get into that. Me and Skylar, we just sit like all night and just talk about it. That's all we do.
And when did that reality hit? Because I'm guessing there was a point in time where you wanted to become a professional golfer, playing on tour or whatever. I'm guessing,
right.
As all of us did.
Right.
Did that moment take place pre-good-good, post-good-good, during-good-good?
Pre.
Right. So
yeah.
Pre-good-good, you were like, professional golf, it's not going to happen.
Right.
I want to venture down this kind of YouTube platform.
Yeah, I had that realization in college. I just didn't love competitive golf. I didn't love it. And you need to love it. You need to love being on the road and doing all that. When I found content creation and getting into that, that's when I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I like.
Yeah.
Like, I love golf and I love playing matches, but I also don't want to do it with money on the line and like my life based on it. Like,
you don't want to do 4 rounds of stroke play staying in all different types
of
places.
I'll do it for YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do 4 rounds of stroke play for YouTube all day. I love it, but not when it's like, you know, you're trying to pay your bills.
I wonder, that might be a silly question to ask. I'll try and articulate it in the best way I can. But if you've got a group of like kids who, let's say, are 15 and good at golf, and you showed them what it would be like to be a DP World Tour player who's kind of okay, keeps the card, not super, super successful, but they're a professional golfer. They can say they're a professional golfer on the DP World Tour versus quite a successful golf YouTuber, and show them actually the real intricate inside lives. Which you'd prefer to do?
I think it depends on what stretch of time that's going to be over. Mm-hmm. Like if it's just 1 year, then you could go down either way. If you said it was over 10 years, I think it depends on the duration.
What would you rather do? If someone said, now you can click your fingers and this YouTube world's never happened, but you've been on the European tour for 12 years, you've had a couple of top fives, you've kind of kept your card.
I think I would personally struggle not excelling if I was just on the DP World Tour as a bit of a journeyman and didn't really ever win anything.
Richard Bland before his win.
I personally think I'd struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of time away from family, a lot of commitment.
Yeah.
You've really got to put the effort in. A lot of times you're not making the cut, you're not mm-hmm. making money.
Oh, yeah.
It's stressful, really, really, really stressful. Where, and how can you ever rank success?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and to some degree, golf YouTube is quite different in that category. Like, you can measure success in many different categories. You can measure success of how you've played in the video, whether you've won the match, and you could deem that as a success.
Right.
You could deem it in the fact of, oh, I played crap that day, but I actually made a great video.
Right.
And the video views have done really well, and the comments are great. That's deemed as a success. It's not all based on your personal performance, where DP World Tour is based only on personal performance.
True.
This might never happen, but could either of you ever foresee a future where you've got a 14-year-old who's grinding on the range, a good player, whose aspirations aren't to be a tour player, although they may have the ability, but they want to be the next Grant, the next GM Golf, the next Rick Shields. Is that a possibility? Or would that just never... Are we always going to aspire for elite performance?
The number one job choice in golf... The number one job choice by kids now at school is to become a YouTuber.
It's crazy.
Which is quite scary.
But could you imagine that, though? A 14-year-old grinding all the gear.
Yeah, but they'd be grinding with a video camera.
Right.
No, but could it be the case where someone said, what do you want to be? Do you want to get on tour? And not even that they don't realise they're good enough. They actually want to be a YouTube golfer.
No, I'm watching that happen. That exact scenario I've watched happen. I'm not going to mention the names, but I've watched some of the best junior golfers, a couple of them that I've played with. I've played with a lot of them. They are, instead of trying to go on the tour, they see... you know, content creation. And I think their eyes go towards YouTube because it's like, it's fun. It's easy. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but it's definitely
it appears that way.
It appears that way for sure. And I think their eyes are going towards content creation over the tour. But there's always going to be the group, the really, you know, yeah. motivated ones that are going to go for.
You know what? I always feel like the really, really, really good players don't even really know about YouTube golf.
I 100% agree. When I was in college playing and I was around all the college golfers, no one ever, you know, talked about YouTube golf. Mm-hmm. I think what's happened with YouTube golf is COVID was a huge thing. Mm-hmm. I think golf just took a boom and golf's been growing so much. So the new people getting in, they start with YouTube and that's Absolutely. What happens. But the real high level of golfers, you're not going to go watch someone on YouTube that's
I flicked through a few of the Walker Cup guys when they were playing at St Andrews a couple of weeks ago, and the UK team versus the Europe team, Great Britain team, sorry, against US team. And I flicked on a few of the profiles because they're actually sharing quite a few of the profiles. And a lot of their profiles, they might have a couple of hundred followers. They're not really updating the social media, Instagram. Mm-hmm. And actually, you kind of click, and two or three out of the teams actually did follow me. And then I clicked on them, and I normally expect some of these younger lads to follow yourself and good. Some of them, like, quite a lot of them didn't follow any of us. It's like, right. God, it's like they don't even know. Like, all they're doing is following Rory, Rahm, like Hovland, like they're following tour players.
And I don't think their dads want them watching probably golfers that aren't as
like,
good.
They're not on their Instagram. They're not following like the Sidemen or Mr. Beast or like. It's not even just golf YouTube. It's like they're not even really tuned into YouTube itself.
I wonder again though, it's still so young, really, the platforms, when you think about it. Like, for example, I'm trying to get back into my running a little bit and be out of shape and doing bits. And there's a running YouTuber I watch, right? Weirdly, you showed me him about 3 years ago. She was getting a pair of shoes you'd like reviewed. And this guy, he's a good runner, he's a good level runner, but his times that he runs are nowhere near like Olympic or anything like that. But he's a good, like, amateur elite runner, if that kind of makes sense. But yeah, I watch him, kind of his personality, and he's still good. He's aspirational, but he's not the best in the world. But I think that's, again, with golfers, you know, people watch the PGA Tour. Yeah, they want to watch who's the best player on the planet. But there's more to it than that. They want to watch personalities, want stories, they want narrative, don't they?
Like at the Open, the amount of times I got stopped at the Open this year, it was incredible. And you know, you'd get, oh, little Jimmy's only come to, he didn't want to meet Rory, he wanted to see you today. And it's like, well, that's a bit mad.
And I suppose that, though,
like, that's a bit crazy.
The question I asked Grant before was about his success from leaving Good. I think that kind of answers it, because, you know, you're a good, very good golfer. You said you're plus one or so, but how many guys in America around your age who've been to college or ever can play golf at that standard? But you've got the following because of your personality, how you are on camera, you know, the videos that you do. And that's what people are buying into. Yes, they're buying into your ability. It's aspirational. You're a great player, but it's much more than that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's entertainment as well.
It has to be, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I'm filming a video, I feel like I'm out there with, you know, the fans. I feel like there's, you know, I'm talking to people and the subscribers. I just feel like there's a connection there versus, you know, just playing golf and not talking. Mm. But back to that tournament idea, I actually have a tournament I entered in. So I'm not trying to go pro, but I did one other tournament a while back, and it was one of my best performing videos in a long time. And I shot a 69, and it was a different style. It was, you know, my wife out in the distance filming and zooming in, and it felt different. And then I snuck a GoPro in the cart, and then I had my buddy Henry caddying for me. So we're going to do that again coming up, but that's really fun for the pro, just the pro golf aspect, bringing that into the channel. I can just enter these minor league tour events, and the guys on this minor league are actually like some of the guys that are making it onto the tour. Brooks used to play on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys work their way up through this minor league tour. And I can just enter them.
And you can play it as an amateur.
I can play it as an amateur, or, I mean, I think we're, are we considered pros?
I am anyway, but
You're a PJ pro, but I've always wondered this, if you make money from golf, are you considered a pro?
I don't think I make my money through this, obviously, and I'm not a pro.
So yeah. I can retain amateur status.
I believe so, yeah, you're not winning prize money.
We looked at this the other day. We did an event. We did a video where we gave the first golfer to make a birdie £10,000, like $14,000 or whatever. And we had a look at this before. And certainly with the RNA, there's criteria. So if you win it for a specific skill, e.g. long drive, e.g. hole in a putt, e.g. making a birdie, it doesn't actually count as excess that you could win as an amateur, if that makes sense.
If it was an 18-hole stroke play event, then yeah, there's a threshold on how much money you can actually earn. And also a holding one as well.
I think so.
A threshold on
I suppose you could enter the event, and if you manage to win it, you can just not take the prize. Right. I don't know.
Right. So with the minor league tour, the amateurs get a gift card to PGA Tour Superstore.
But it'll be a limit.
There's a limit.
Yeah.
And then the money that you make.
But the pros, they actually get straight cash.
Yeah. But then the money your video makes off that, I suppose, is for entertainment purposes. So it's not actually, I don't know. You'll find a way.
Yeah, no, it's definitely like, I'm not in there. I'm not in there to like take their money. If I win, that would be amazing. Like that would be crazy. Cause there's like a lot of really good names entered. Olin Brown Jr. is like, there's like some, you know, some guys with parents on the Champions Tour, like they're entered in there, and it's cool to see who plays, but yeah, I'm entered in that, and then I'm actually going to Bob's tournament right after that.
Oh, Breezy.
Yeah. Yeah, in Chicago. So we're going to play in that too. I'm going to film that one.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good. Yeah. Excellent. Grant, it's been amazing chatting to you, as always. I'm excited about this week. I really am. You know, we hadn't met before last summer, and I feel like we really connected and chatted lots about YouTube. It feels like, as a part of the group, you were the kind of the most forthcoming and switched on to actually thinking about analytics and thumbnails and content, and you were chatting about our Facebook strategy and all that, and it'll be great this week again to collaborate on ideas off camera and on camera, obviously. It's been awesome. Hopefully your clubs arrive. Yeah, I'm gonna go and pick them up now from the hotel, and hopefully we can film that hit video where we go through what's in the bag, and then we've got a big match this afternoon.
I mean, there's just to end this, I mean, there's no one, you know, Rick Shields, I've always looked up to your guys' content, and that's like kind of like, I mean, you guys are my, like, the inspiration that I take each day to be like, hey, you know, what are you guys doing that we can do better? And that, yeah, it's been amazing.
Keep it that way.
Yeah. I can't look anywhere else.
Don't be catching too much up, all right, Grant? Just chill out, all right? No, you're doing well. Everyone listening, watching, be sure to subscribe and enjoy good golf, very good golf with a blend of entertainment on Grant's channel. We'll put a link down in the description below. I think you're going to enjoy the content coming very soon. You've been a wonderful guest for our 200th episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
We have got a live podcast coming up very soon, which we've actually sold tickets out. We sold out of tickets in about, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
We sold out tickets,
and that's going to be coming up right now
in a few weeks. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Not yet. In a few weeks' time,
at Marriott Worsley Park.
It is actually our kind of celebration of 200 podcasts, and also 4 years doing the podcast.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you back on again. Thank you very much, Grant. Go and chill out for a few hours, and we shall see you very soon on the golf course.
Thank you, guys.
Don't get practicing too much. See you, everyone. Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.